but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Steven, we're going to interview Scott Lakem, the University of Portland Athletic Director here. While I'm doing that, can you come up with a couple of basketball trivia questions or football trivia questions or baseball trivia questions?
I will do my best, yes.
And this is a no-peeking trivia show, so you can't look it up. I took great satisfaction in answering those questions correctly. I'm on a roll. Maybe I should quit. Scott Lakem, University of Portland Athletic Director, joining us now. Are you a trivia guy? Do you find yourself intrigued?
Big trivia geek. I'm the guy that plays those games at Applebee's instead of talking to my family. You know.
I love it. I love it. I don't know. Did you hear last segment? I could bounce these questions off you.
Let's go.
Okay. Which two Hall of Fame baseball pitchers who pitched in the 1950s and 1960s, extra hint there, went to college on basketball scholarships?
Oh, geez. Bob Gibson?
Yes, Bob Gibson is one. Creighton, good for you. You're halfway home. Okay. You take the win. Do you want to quit? Do you want to quit? No, close. Sandy Koufax.
That was my third choice. Okay.
There you go. Nice. You were right in there. Hey, let's do a State of the Union here. WCC, University of Portland, you're in an elevator. Let's just say you got stakeholders in the elevator with you. They go, hey, how's it going? What would you say?
I'd say we are adjusting well, if not perfectly, to the new world order. We're a place that can compete at the conference and national level and still produce top-level students. I think that's the thing, John, we sell in fundraising a lot. You know, we're a top-level Division I program, and our department GPA is a 3.5, right, with coming off our best women's basketball season ever, our best baseball season ever, two of the top track runners in the nation, an elite soccer program. You know, men's basketball we'll talk about. I think we've done some good things, and that's a whole different world we're trying to capture and conquer, but doing things the right way and competing at the highest level.
The you mentioned basketball. There were questions people asked you, hey, are you bringing Shante Leggins back? This was during kind of the conference tournament. You didn't hesitate. You jumped right on it. You gave him a vote of confidence. What did you see with Shante in the program that you liked?
No doubt. I mean, that's our guy. I think, if anything, I'm more concerned about the system and how we adjust to the system than who our head coach is, right? John, I liken it to when a head coach has a great year. I mean, this goes back years, right? I worry, you know, who's going to call about our soccer coach? Who's going to call about our baseball coach? Who's going to try to hire Mike Meek away, right? Now it's who's going to try to hire our center away? Who's going to try to hire our point guard away? And that's, you know, Shante's brought in some really good players. I mean, we hadn't had a WCC Freshman of the Year in basketball in a long time. We hadn't had a second-team All-WCC guy in a long time. He's bringing in the right guys. I think part of it's on me. How do we hold on to some of these guys? Or, you know, how do we find these recruiting niches? You know, we lost two of our good Australians, but we've got a couple more coming in that we really like. One was a point guard on an NCAA tournament team, and one was a good player at USF. So we're just going to have to adjust and turn the roster. But he's bringing in the right guys, and I think he's got a really good reputation, and we've seen it for ourselves of developing, you know, developing players. And the system has changed, and he's trying to adjust. When we hired him out of Eastern, he didn't have one transfer on his roster. You know, now you're starting four or five transfers. So the game has changed, and we need to keep adjusting.
I wondered in football if we would see a lot of schools keep their coach because, hey, revenue sharing's coming. There's enough worries about budget. You can't buy someone out. Do you think that happened in basketball as well at the end of the season, that people said, no, we're going status quo because we need every dollar?
I think there were a couple spots I looked around and thought jobs might open up that didn't. I'll tell you, that was never a factor for me in our program, but I think that happened during COVID, John. You know, there was a cycle where there were only 20 openings, and the next year there were 60. And I think you might see that again next year if the House settlement passes and we enter the new normal. But, yeah, I think there were a few spots where guys are still there that might not have been otherwise.
We're talking to Scott Lakem, athletic director, University of Portland. Back to basketball, the WCC in 26 and beyond facing no Gonzaga. How does that change the conference and where you see the pilots?
Well, I think no Gonzaga and plus no Oregon State, Washington State, right? And it's a new frontier, and that's been a great frontier with those two for us. I think we got to look at it as opportunity, right? I mean, you could put your head down and go, oh, TV might change, and we've lost the big drawing card. I also look at it as an opportunity. And you know, how do we move up, and how do we move up into the top half of the league? I can't fault Gonzaga. They did what was best for them, and we're lucky to have had Oregon State and Washington State. But for us, in men's basketball, how do we move up? And in sports like women's basketball, baseball, men's soccer, how do we become dominant now and be a dynasty in this conference?
How did Washington State and Oregon State impact the conference? Was it about what you thought, or was it more or less of an impact?
I loved it. I think you look at the Power Four right now, John, the smallest Power Four conference is what, 16 schools? and we were limping along at 8 or 9. So having 11, I think, bigger conference schedules, better championships, deeper leagues, I thought that was a good thing. Obviously for us, it was nice to have two Pacific Northwest rivals. It helped gate in a couple of sports. You know, we beat them, they beat us. I thought it was a really, really good balance. They've been fantastic partners. The one downside for us that has our coaches a little frustrated is those are automatic non-conference games for us in every sport, right? So now we're having to leave the region a little more than we wanted to, because we were used to playing them and everything. But they've been, you know, Scott Barnes and Ann McCoy and Wayne Tinkle, and they've been great partners. It's been great ads for us.
The you know, there's a lot of talk about football. Basketball can't be far behind it. Do you think basketball at some point, you know, has room for, you know, more money, more revenue? Will TV companies ever come in to basketball conferences like the WCC and say, hey, we've got some extra money and we value basketball more than before? Because right now, Brett Yormark of the Big 12 saying it's undervalued. The Pac-12 is trying to shop their future basketball product as, you know, a top-notch product. But you tell me what you see.
Well, I think Brett has a point, right? I don't think it's going to be anywhere near football money, right, unless the sponsors talk. And basketball is just messy from a TV window perspective, right? College football owns Saturdays. You know, it's harder for college basketball to own a day with the NBA and everything else going on. So I do think there's a lot of opportunity. John, I would look ahead. I think the game changes in 2032 when the men's and the women's March Madness contracts come back up and are going to be worth collectively billions of dollars. The game changes, and then, you know, I think you're at football-only conferences by then potentially. And I think you might be at basketball-only conferences at some point. But 2032 is when I think that next major step happens for basketball.
The rest of your sports, we had your soccer coach on, Nick Carlin-Voigt, earlier. You know, he's trying to raise NIL dollars. He's got this event coming up on April 26th on campus. You know, he's fighting the good fight. He's got a winning program. It's something everybody should be proud of. It's one of these things that I talk about. Like, the city of Portland has a lot of things that were wrong and wrong with it in the last decade or so, but, you know, the UP soccer program has been a beacon of light in there. How do you keep these Olympic sports, how do you keep these non-revenue generating sports humming along in a world that, you know, says the deck's stacked against you?
I would say the contrary, and I think the deck actually helps us in a sport like men's soccer. There's no SEC men's soccer, right? There's no Big 12 men's soccer. There's the Vermonts, there's the Denvers, there's the Portlands. I mean, there's a spot for a school like this. It's the reason we made the Elite Eight a couple of years ago. And I would tell you that, you know, at this point, NIL is real in the women's basketballs and the men's soccers and the baseballs. But those are kids we weren't getting anyway. Frankly, we're going to the top of the Power Four. And men's soccer, we're more likely to lose a kid to the pros than we are to lose a kid to UCLA. I mean, we can compete NIL in that realm and what we have to sell. So, you know, if you have a good culture and a winning history like we do in so many sports, we're still very much in the game in the portal. I think football and men's basketball are the two that are just different worlds if you're outside of that neighborhood. But the other sports, I think we're still very much in the game. We won 31 games in women's basketball this year. You saw us. And we'll continue to compete, and I like where we are with our NIL there. But there's still a space for us.
I am eager to see kind of what you look like on both sides. What did you learn about women's basketball in this season? I thought Michael Meek did such a good job with the program, but in the end, the selection committee said, hey, we need you to schedule tougher. Is there much more you can do there? Will teams play you?
Well, no. We had two Power Four teams on the West Coast drop us late, and I don't blame them. I probably would have done the same thing, right? I mean, you know, we were supposed to play Stanford at home, I'll be honest, and they dropped us. And then it felt good to go down and beat them in the postseason. But, you know, I get it. You know, they deferred the game a year, and there's risk. You know, in a sport like that or in a baseball, we could play a top Power Four team, but the middle and the bottom Power Four teams want no part of us and want no part of the Santa Claras or the Gonzagas. And, I don't blame them. The issue in women's basketball this year is you know, Gonzaga and Oregon State and Washington State, you know, all had 100-plus RPIs or nets, which never happens, right? So we went in the league and our net dropped 30 points, even though we were playing a really good Oregon State team and a really good Gonzaga team and a really good Washington State team. Sometimes that just happens. And, you know, I've learned from my time on the baseball committee and the women's soccer committee that, you know, there's a multiplier effect. Those SEC teams go into league play, and the worst net team they play is 60, right? So win or lose, they're going up every night. And that's, you know, that's the tough part about life as a mid-major.
You know, we had Jerry Palm on, CBS Sports bracketology guy, and he said, look, you know, if you're at the top of the league, you obviously want to play, you know, the best schools that you can beat. Schools at the bottom of the league should just be scheduling every game they can win to help raise the overall profile of the conference. How hard is it to get teams to admit they're going to be bottom of the conference teams? Because I think it's easy to say that, but then you turn and you go maybe to some of the perennial teams that are at the bottom and you go, hey, we need you to schedule softer. Can you get them to do that?
It's hard. I mean, you know, Shante and I talk about it in men's basketball. I mean, you still want to challenge yourselves, right? But even if you're picked in the middle or bottom of the league, you still want to schedule the best teams you can beat, right? You want to go play in an ESPN tournament. You want to take your shots, but you also want to find some games. You want to buy five or six games and play a couple non-D1s to gain some confidence and play some guys and have a chance. But you know, I hear Jerry's told me 100 times that same phrase, you know, play the best teams you can beat. The hard thing is scheduling is really, really hard, John. I mean, we could talk about this for an hour in every sport, right? That, you know, the good teams won't come to our gym. They won't go to USF. They won't go to Pepperdine. We've got to go there, right, and take our chances. And in men's basketball, the day of a home-and-home series are gone. Right, you're either getting bought or you're buying somebody, which is frustrating. But that's the world we're in.
The USFs of the world. Traditionally, I did not imagine a school like USF paying $300,000 for a player. But Mookie Cook leaves Oregon, gets in the portal, ends up at USF. I'm told he's getting $300,000 to play basketball there. In your league, is that market value, or does that raise your eyebrows as well as like, okay, they're spending?
John, that doesn't surprise me. That's where we are. USF's been very to their credit, they've been very aggressive, and they've caught lightning in a bottle with two pretty good coaches, right? I mean, Kyle Smith, who's had a good run several places and is at Stanford now, and Todd Golden, who just won the national title, and they've been able to build on that success the last decade. That doesn't surprise me, and that, I mean, those numbers are probably just going to go up. The issue is not what the numbers are now. Are they sustainable? And I think that's the greater question for so many schools, right? I mean, how long could schools pay $5-10 million for a roster, right? And that I just don't know.
I am curious to see if this particular portal cycle, Scott, is, you know, a little bit inflated because some of the NIL collectives are saying, hey, we need to empty the bank account because regulation's coming. With the House settlement, do you think that impacted this NIL market in basketball and potentially football right now?
Oh, yeah. No, yes, John, you're 100% correct. I think that did it. And I think there's also a cash-out mentality here, right, John? I mean, parents, agents, oh, it's the House settlement. There's money now. And we had two players in men's basketball. One went to Wisconsin, one went to LSU for literally life-changing money for the family, right? These are kids that enjoyed their UP experience. You can't fault them for that, right? Now our job is to find kids to replace them and fill those shoes. But, no, I think everybody's just asking for as much as they can. And, you know, there's some kids that you talk about, whether it be 200, 300, you go, hey, that's market value, or maybe that's below market value. But then you have some kids call saying they're worth $200,000. You go, there's no way, right? There's some kids that get some really bad advice, and that bums me out.
Yeah, and I think, it's hard when you are, in the position that you're in. You've got agents, you've got families, you have people who are maybe have unreasonable expectations or might be pitting one school against another. How do you fact check? Do you call other schools, or is there any kind of clearinghouse or database or a source you lean on that goes, hey, is this offer real that this person says they have for another school? How do you vet that?
Well, a lot of our coaches' agents have a pretty good feel for it, John. I think that's it, and part of it. I think also, you there?
Yeah, got you back. Lost you for a second. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I think, coaches' agents have a pretty good feel for it. So that's one thing, right? And then, you trust other coaches, but you're also calling other coaches, hey, was that kid a good player, a good fit? Are they going to fit with us?
Yeah, and I think in the end, I'm hoping that, this market settles and, the college figures out what it's going to be and we can move forward. Do you worry at all, Scott, that this whole thing's in jeopardy at all, or can you afford to worry about it when you're knee deep in it?
No, I worry about it. I think, and this, John, the House settlement is the next shoe to drop. It's sure not the last shoe to drop, right? I mean, there's a lot more changes to come. There will be challenges to this case. There will be cases after this. And I do think, and we all know, I think Division I will probably split into two or three pieces at some point. But it, the way we're headed, I have trouble believing that these increases in this path is sustainable in a couple of years.
Yeah, and I think, too, there's just a lot of hope. I think there's a lot of people, Scott, holding out hope that college athletics will still be college athletics afterwards. I appreciate you coming on and sharing your expertise and insight and your trivia knowledge with our audience.
Thank you, John.
Anytime. There he goes. Scott Lakem, University of Portland Athletic Director. I am worried about the non-revenue generating sports, the Olympic sports. I'm worried about the spirit of college athletics. I'm not saying kids shouldn't get paid. I'm not saying athletes shouldn't share in the success, but I'm saying that the NCAA, which really is the member institutions, it's the schools, it's the presidents, it's the ADs, it's the coaches. Everybody wants to point a finger at the NCAA and be like, look at the nasty old NCAA. They blew it. The schools blew it. the membership blew it. They knew this was coming. They were ill-equipped to handle it. They did a horrible job with it. And now they're in a mess because of it. Now they've got to figure it out. They've got to dig themselves out of it. Steven, have you come up with trivia questions?
I have, yes.
Oh, I can't wait. After the break, Steven tries to stump the audience. Do you want to try to answer a trivia question? Are you a sports trivia expert? 503-417-7575. We'll put you on the hot seat.